Hi, this is Paul. Well, I've got the COVIDs. It was a couple days ago. My wife said she wasn't feeling that well. I had a couple of kids who had been sick the weekend before, and so she thought, well, I'll just take a COVID test. And the darn thing came back positive. And so then she was home yesterday, and my son is home. The one that graduated from college is looking for a job and taking care of the dog and such. So I got to make some videos yesterday. And then I got home last night and I thought, a little bit of a runny nose. I should take a COVID test. And bang, positive. And so I had a booster. That was my fourth shot. I had pretty much thought, I'm not going to get any more of these boosters. I'm kind of done with that. But then in 2022, I went to Europe, and then I went to Canada. And in Canada, I think that Canadian COVID is the stronger variant. So I came back from Canada with COVID and gave it to my wife, and she wasn't too happy with that. So she returned the favor this year and gave hers to me. And I have very few symptoms, a little bit of a runny nose every now and then, a little headache. But other than that, I feel pretty good. Don't know if it'll last. I mean, what often happens when you get sick is you sort of exert yourself and then you realize, oh, I am really sick. I don't know. But I don't have body aches or don't feel too bad. So it's just given me a little bit of time to reflect on some things. I have an outside door to my office. Nobody else is in the church, so I can just come into my office and do stuff like this. And I'm not contaminating any space. I'm not, you know, putting anyone in danger. So get the dog out of the house, take the dog outside, go into my office, make a video or two, see how long I last, and then we'll see. Now, this morning, as I was getting the dog some exercise, I was listening to this Michael Millerman video on who is reading the Peter Thiel essay, The Straussian Moment, and you can see I'm about 37 minutes in. It's almost a two-hour video, but I'm finding it interesting. I'm finding it touching on the question of the Enlightenment, secularity, all of those kinds of issues that are sort of roiling around right now. And I was listening to it and thinking, yeah, I'm subjecting myself to yet another narrative to try to make sense of the world through the narrative. I had a conversation with Cale Zeldin a few days ago about narratives, and you know, narratives are these, you know, they're like compression engines. They're worldviews. They're ways into the world. They're an attempt to try to manage the combinatorial explosiveness of the world and of life to break it down into a digestible narrative. And again, we human beings are very good with narratives. I've been this time of year, I usually try to think about what my computing needs are going to be for the next year based on my experience of the last year. So I've been doing some PC shopping and just you know, making all those kinds of decisions, anticipating, okay, what kind of travel do I do next year? What kind of needs do I require for computers when I travel? Weight versus GPU versus et cetera, et cetera. And so I'm working on all of that. I have a lot of ideas about, you know, compression, because that's what GPUs do. And narratives and sort of Windows versus Mac and all these Macs with 8 gigabytes of RAM, which I find absolutely silly. They should have 16. Anyway, I bore you with the technical things. Narratives are sort of windows into the world in order to address the complexity of the world and simplify the world down into a narrative structure that we can manage and maintain, and one hopefully that will be productive. Now, in this essay, Peter Thiel begins by talking about the post-World War II economic assumptions that basically if they make the world richer, if they give the world more money, then there will be less violence. And how September 11, I'm simplifying the narrative, of course, September 11 challenges that because the people who attacked on September 11 were wealthy, Western-educated Saudis that had a religious narrative. So then he goes into John Locke, this paragraph that I just paused quickly here. Since September 11, our peace has been broken, for there remains another very important boundary whose existence the American people had forgotten, and they had forgotten about the rest of the world and its deep division from the West. The non-Western world had not yet seen the Peace of Westphalia. And this, of course, in many ways sort of addresses Islam. And those of you who have been following the recent videos know that there's usually things that make it in the video that are sort of, okay, this is what I'm thinking about right now that I can talk about. But then there are sort of deeper processes and questions that are sort of lurking in the background. And one of them is, okay, how in fact are we to think about Islam in the context of secularity in the West? Because again, I've been talking about the fact that in many ways secularity is a Christian invention, and a lot of Jesus smuggling has gone through secularity. So all of those things. Another one of those sort of deep things that I've been thinking about, and again, when I get sick like this and suddenly all of the stuff that I have to do gets put on pause. I can't go out to lunch with anybody. I can't visit with anybody. I can't talk face-to-face with anybody. I can't be on church on Sunday. I can't do the Freddie and Paul show. All of these things I can't do because of, you know, COVID isolation. So it's, you know, it's kind of a, on one hand, yeah, I'm going to miss all these things, and the church is sort of inconvenienced, and the elders have to figure out what to do about Sunday morning. But on the other hand, I get a little bit more free time and free space to think about things. And so Islam and secularity is one of those big things, and narrative sort of as compression engine, sort of as ways to make what is combinatorial explosive more manageable. But of course, there's all of our narratives are limited and imperfect in terms of sort of managing the world. And this obviously impacts religious ideas, political ideas. And then there's the other thing that I'm thinking about, which is sort of we have a loss in belief in narrative that's sort of postmodernity. But one of the things that postmodernity said, you can't believe in narratives, and say, oh, okay, you're telling me a narrative. I mean, the narratives are inescapable. They are simply we are simply too bound to them to give up. Now, we recognize the limitations of narratives, and this in many ways is given to us by pervasive pluralism. So we recognize the limitations in narratives, but they're also absolutely inescapable. One of the conversations I want to set up is sort of the metamodern conversation, which I think that's something that's sort of behind metamodernity, is this narratives can't live with them, can't live without them, sort of that dynamic. And then there's statistics. Now, long, long time ago, Jordan Peterson recommended a book which I read. Actually, the audio book is an abridged book, which was kind of a nuisance because I was both looking at the regular book and listening to the abridged book. But it talked basically about the rise of statistics. And I think part of what happened with mass culture at the beginning of the 20th century, the rise of sort of early 20th century propaganda, was the confidence in particular narratives, the confidence also in science based on statistics. And, you know, in many ways, rightfully so. Statistics are a very reliable tool in many respects. We've seen the breakdown of narrative, and I think part of what we've seen with these illnesses that have sort of defied modern science is the breakdown of statistics. So, like I mentioned, and some of you will scorn me for having gotten any COVID vaccines at all. Maybe I was an idiot. Maybe I was a fool. Maybe so. But you sort of weigh the statistics. And so now, okay, I've got COVID and my wife has COVID. I got the vaccine and she didn't get a booster. You know, she got a couple of early ones, and then she's like, she's much more of an anti-vaxxer than I am. Well, she's not really an anti-vaxxer. I shouldn't talk about her. But anyway, so she's got a slightly worse case of COVID than I do. But part of the problem is that she works with these kids all the time, and so she's always getting colds and things throughout the school year because she's working in a school. Schools are just regions full of little bugs and viruses, and kids are little germ-sharing machines. That's what they are. So do I have a slightly less case than my wife because I got a booster beginning of October? But the booster didn't obviously keep me from getting it at all, so is it effective? And now the science that we use to wade in on this is statistics. Because the truth is that the questions surrounding even something like COVID are so complex, you only have statistics as a tool to deal with them. Now, let's say someone decides, okay, we're going to study PVK exhaustively. We're going to do, in fact, the funny thing is that just earlier this week on Tuesday, I was into the doctor and I had a physical. And before my physical, he runs, you know, I go to the lab and they take a blood draw and they look at all of my blood levels and everything was fine. And then I go in for the physical and, you know, he checks on moles and because I tend to be a kind of moly person and, you know, these are some to kind of keep an eye on. Okay. But, you know, no sign of anything bad. And then, you know, you get the prostate exam and you get all of this other stuff and, you know, everything is normal. Now, of course, that's statistically normal. But if you were to devote thousands and thousands of dollars of testing to me, well, you could maybe look for the, you know, look at all kinds of things, but you can't tell me via statistics more or something that's necessarily better than what I know already via no statistics. I remember reading Yuval Harari's books, his book Sapien, and then the book that he wrote after that of Homo Deus, and he talked about that intuition was sort of the best thing that human beings had until AI comes along basically with Google, and because Google supposedly knows me better than I know myself in some ways, but this of course leads to the question of what kind of knowing. Because part of what's so sneaky about John Vervaeke's relevance realization is it's all about the selection of variables and looking at what key things determine particular outcomes. So, for example, did me getting a booster in October impact my current case of COVID? Don't know. Now, when people ask me about it, they'll say, well, you know, I got a booster, my wife didn't get a booster. So that's why your case is worse. Then again, last time I had COVID, which was after I got home from Canada, my wife's case was worse too. And we had the exact same timing and amount of vaccines in us. So is it because just physiologically COVID doesn't hit me as hard? And this is the third time I believe that I've had COVID. The first time was in March of 2020, before they had tests or anything like that. In March of 2020, suddenly I had a slight fever. I had a headache. I was fatigued. And I was down for about a day and a half. And, you know, I just didn't think much of it. And, you know, and it was just after that, pretty soon, that all the 14 days to slow the curve or whatever foolishness we were undergoing. And, okay. And then after I got back from Canada in 2022, after all that travel in Europe and Canada, I came back and I had COVID again. And I had a headache. I had a slight fever. I had some fatigue for about a day and a half, and then pretty much got better pretty quickly after that. And that time I had COVID tests, so, oh, this is COVID. So then I thought, well, March 2020, maybe that was COVID. And then actually when the part of the reason I got the COVID test is I had a follow-up doctor's appointment for something else. And so I went into the doctor and then he's always going through, well, you should get these vaccinations. So I said, oh, come on, doc, what, you know, should I or shouldn't I? And I really like my doctor and I have good conversations with my doctor. And we talked about this and we talked about that. And I left there unconvinced that I would get it, but then I was going to Europe. And, you know, this is whole part of the, what I talked about before too, in terms of the John Vervaeke, Alex O'Connor video where how rational are we? Because, you know, if I'm scrolling through my Twitter trends and I see, you know, Michael Martin on Twitter railing against the jab, or if I, you know, talk to other members of my family that are like, oh, you should definitely get the vaccination. It's like, well, I get a vaccination. Do I get a vaccination to get my family off my back? Because truth be told, I've had plenty of vaccinations in my life and I've never had a reaction to any of them. So it's like, man, another jab, I don't care. So does it make a difference? Statistics can't really answer that. Statistics can say, well, probability, yes or no, this or that, but I am not a probability. I am a sample of one. And so statistics can, in some ways, answer some things. Well, what are the odds of me walking into the gas station, buying a lottery ticket, and walking out a billionaire? Pretty darn small. And yet, that happens for people. And so I think part of what we're seeing in this breakdown, it certainly is sort of the skepticism and necessity of narratives, and also increasing skepticism about the capacity of statistics to guide one's life. Now, I tend to be someone who sort of thinks statistically often. People are, I know a number of people who are afraid to travel by air. And of course, I say, you're probably safer traveling by air than you are by car, statistically speaking. And yet, we travel by car and we travel by air. And so I think part of what's happened, and I think, again, a lot of this is due to the fact that our worlds, the way that we intuitively model the world in our mind, develop a map in our mind with respect to the world, this is made up of the data we have before us. Look at human beings before, let's say, the agricultural revolution. What was the world that they were embedded in? Look at human beings, let's say, in a little town in Europe with a little church. And most of their time is working in a field. What is the world they have before them? Look at a human being at the beginning of the 20th century living in an urban context, listening to the radio, eventually watching news on TV, reading newspapers. All those narratives in many ways sort of pre-chewed for them. The world of watching Walter Cronkite, the most trusted man in America. All those nice, clean narratives. Nice mass movements. And of course, now the internet. Bang. All these algorithms sending us down different paths. Complexifying the world. But then, of course, we have to decomplexify in order to live. Do you get the jab? Do you not get the jab? How do you decide? Well, talk to your doctor. Well, yeah, your doctor knows some things. And doctor will say, well, have you had any reaction to any of the past vaccines? Nope, not a bit. Well, why not get it? Odds are it might help. And it's like, well, but what about those? And so then I asked him, I said, well, what about vaccine injuries? He says, yeah, they are higher. But then again, he looks at me and he looks at my health and he looks at the fact that I'm not allergic to anything and I've never had a reaction to a vaccine and generally fairly healthy. And he's like, I probably won't hurt you. So you can get it. But, you know, he doesn't make me get it or make me not get it. He just offers advice and I'm the one who chooses. And I choose on the basis of narratives and statistics and all sorts of things. So and whenever I make a video like this, I'm thinking, what on earth am I doing? Why these are the kinds of things that roll through my head. Why should I share them with anyone? Well, maybe they roll through your heads too. And then, of course, just even mentioning COVID, there's going to be all sorts of things on Twitter in the comment section of, you know, unsubscribe to Vanderclay because he got the jab. And of course, YouTube's going to have a little, you know, COVID information down there. It's like, YouTube, Are you really going to try to play the mass media game still when you're one of the chief purveyors of all of our little micro-narratives and the destruction of statistics, even though I open my YouTube algorithms and it's just full of statistics? Somebody asked me, why, let me pull up the video. Somebody asked me why they thought this video is doing so well. And it's funny because most people say, well, it's because Sarah Hyder is a very attractive woman and there's a little bit of cleavage there. And yeah, but this video has three women, not two, another attractive woman, and exactly the same picture. And this video hasn't done any as well. So is it just the attractiveness of is it just the attraction of an attractive woman on the video? I don't think so. What's really funny is that back when we were talking about this this revival that was going on in Kentucky, I made a video about it where I incorporated, like I usually do, a few other videos and talked about it a little bit. That video just kept going. It didn't have an attractive woman on the thumbnail. Why did that video just keep going? I have no idea. Why does this video just kind of keep going? I have no idea. Is it statistics? Well, certainly the algorithm is using statistics but in terms of my capacity, now I know that there are certainly the title I think helps, and certainly the strange thing in the middle. I mean, but there's lots of other videos that have done with similar titles, similar thumbnails, that haven't done near as well. Statistics. What really can statistics tell me? So, anyway, here's another video. I don't know what kind of thumbnail I'll make for this video. It'll be interesting to read what y'all have to say about it, especially as you sort of comment on the way I have decided to run my life based on my narratives and statistics. So leave a comment. Let me know what you think.